This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program, we have two guests involved in the concerts this weekend by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Bloomington and Springfield, Karen Lynn Deal, who's the music director of the orchestra, and the featured composer of a work called Jefferson in His Own Words, which is having its world premiere by the orchestra this weekend. The concerts are Friday night at 8 o'clock in the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts and Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield. We'll talk with both of those women and have some samples both of music on the concert and also of Judith Shaton's music. That's the name of the composer. Coming up on Live and Local. My guest for this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9 is Karen Lynn Deal, who is music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Bloomington and Springfield. They are performing in both locations this weekend, Friday and Saturday, in that order. A program that features a world premiere of a work by a woman named Judith Shaton and features the well-known American television journalist Bill Curtis, who I used to hear with some regularity when I lived in Chicago. And Karen is with me on the show. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you.
So how did you discover Ms. Shaton?
Well, this has so many associations. I'll try to be as brief as possible. But I was born and raised in Virginia, in Richmond. And about an hour and a half from there is the University of Virginia, which all young Virginians aspire to go to and study law. And that's also the home of Thomas Jefferson and Monticello. And when I was growing up, my father would take us to Monticello and exposed us to that whole area and to history. And so I became knowledgeable of Jefferson and other historical events in Jamestown, Williamsburg, as a child. And then as I started studying music, I met a man named Gerald Morgan. He owned the only classical record store in Richmond at the time, and that's back when things were LPs instead of instead of CDs that we know today. And I would visit him quite frequently, and he would, pull out the latest recording by the New York Philharmonic or Cleveland and say, "You really need to listen to this." And as I started into college and started entering into competitions for conducting, I began to win things, but I didn't have the money to actually attend them once I would win the audition. And Mr. Morgan came to my rescue. And over the first 15 years or so of my student days and my early conducting days, Mr. Morgan made things financially possible for me that otherwise I never would have been able to do or to accomplish. You know, anything from paying for me to go to Aspen to when I won the audition to Tanglewood, when I won the ability to study in Vienna, to, you know, student loans hanging over my head and hospital bills. I mean, he was just so generous, and had he not helped me, you know, I don't know what if would have happened. And so he and I have quite a bond. I go to see him every Christmas when I go back to Richmond, and he's extremely involved with supporting artists. And when I went to see him about 4 years ago, he gave me a CD by Judith Shaton. And he said that he was interested in her music, and he had met her, and should I find anything on the CD that I liked, that he would appreciate it if I could program something by her here in Illinois. And I did. I really liked her piece called Stringing the Bow. And the subsequent season, we played that piece with the chamber orchestra here, and it was very successful. And Judith came from Virginia, and you know, for that performance. And during that time, she and I began to talk about Mr. Morgan and how much he had done for both of us, and how much he had done, you know, from Richmond, Virginia to Lincoln Center, and that we really wanted to do something special for him. And as we discussed it, the realization that Mr. Morgan is a direct descendant of Jefferson, you know, that he's a Virginian, and that she works at University of Virginia, it all began to come together that she would write a piece based on the letters of Thomas Jefferson, and I would perform it here. And we would see if we could get performances in Virginia as well, which we've been able to do. And so now, 4 years later, we have this piece that I'm excited about performing by Judith, and it's called Jefferson in His Own Words, and it's for narrator and orchestra. It's in four movements, each of the movements depicting a different, you know, four different letters that he wrote. The first one is called Political Passion, and it's a letter that he wrote to different political constituents. The second one is Head and Heart. He writes to his granddaughter and his romantic interest in Paris. And the third movement is called Justice Cannot Sleep, and in that he's talking about his land and his farm, and he's talking about justice. He talks about slavery and the injustice of slavery, but at the same time he tells how many slaves he owns, so that's quite interesting. And then the fourth part is called Freedom of Reason, and in that there are quotes from a letter that he's writing about the end of his life and how he's leaving University of Virginia as his legacy. So, and the whole thing is dedicated, of course, to Mr. Morgan. So it's going to be really exciting and really challenging. I'm so glad that Bill Curtis is going to be able to narrate it for us. He narrated the Lincoln concert that I did last year for the bicentennial, and was marvelous. So since this has particularly personal elements to me, to go all the way back to, you know, my father taking us to Monticello, all the way through this man that helped me to get where I am today, to whom I'm so grateful, all the way to now being able to give the world premiere of this piece, the associations for me are sort of endless. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it sounds like quite an undertaking, and and I remember, I'm actually trying to remember vividly, which I can't quite do, being at Monticello when I was a kid, when my family would go on summer vacations, and that's certainly one of the places we visited. And I remember years later going to see Mount Vernon, which is Washington's home, and thinking it paled in comparison to the magnificence of Monticello.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you go to Monticello, you start to realize how gifted Thomas Jefferson was. You know, he could do and did so many different things. We know him as a politician, but you know, he was a substantial farmer. He was a musician. He played the violin. The reason we're playing the Corelli, we're playing a Corelli Concerto Grosso as the opening piece. And that's because he used to play Corelli on his violin, and he really liked Corelli's music. But you see, when you're there, that he was an inventor, and of course, just a magnificent architect, because he designed Monticello and University of Virginia, and you know, just the pots that he had his hands in were innumerable. And you know, that's so impressive. You know, from the inventions you see the moment you walk through the front door, of Monticello is just stunningly beautiful.
You're listening to a conversation I had with Karen Lynn Deal, music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, a couple of days ago regarding their concerts this weekend and a new work by Judith Shaton. And given her mention of the fondness of Thomas Jefferson for the music of Corelli and the fact that they are doing a concerto grosso of Corelli on the program, here is the opening movement to that particular one. It's Opus 6, number 4. Here on Live and Local, the performers here are the Brandenburg Consort. We heard the opening introduction and first movement of the Concerto Grosso No. 4 of Arcangelo Corelli, the Brandenburg Consort led by Roy Goodman here on Live and Local. You can hear that complete concerto performed by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra this weekend twice, Friday night in Bloomington and Saturday night in Springfield, along with the world premiere of Judith Shaton's work called Jefferson in His Own Words, about which I have been speaking with Karen Lynn Deal, conductor of the orchestra, and coming up in a little while we'll talk with the composer herself. Continuing meanwhile here on Live and Local with my conversation with Karen Deal. In what way, assuming there are ways, does Judith Shaton's music reflect that eclecticism of Jefferson's activities?
Well, that's a good question. You see, I still haven't heard it. So, you know, I've been, I can probably answer that better in 3 or 4 days from now. You know, since it's the world premiere, there is no recording of it. I've been studying the score, of course, and I've been playing parts of it on the piano. But to get a full and complete sense of it, you know, I'll have to hear it like everybody else. And I'll be able to better answer that question on the flip side of the experience. But what I can say is that the letters that are quoted and all of the narration represents letters written by Jefferson. So there's no talking about Jefferson. It's Jefferson talking about his life and himself and whoever he's corresponding with. And the music sets up each of the letters and corresponds with what's happening in the letters extremely well. And you know, that's something that a composer has to task to work at and learn how to do, because, you know, I guess the narrated piece that people know the best is probably Lincoln Portrait. And with Lincoln Portrait, there's, you know, several minutes of music, just orchestra alone at the beginning, before the narration ever starts. And that music at the beginning sets up this sense of patriotism and strength and courage, and then you hear the person begin to narrate and talk about Lincoln, and at various places where they're talking about the softer sides of Lincoln, the music becomes has more repose. In places where you would imagine it took great courage for Lincoln to do what he was doing, then the music rises up to meet that, and this is similar in that way. Only, of course, here you have four movements, and so the orchestra is more integrated with the narration and the text. So I particularly like it because it gives four different aspects of Jefferson's life, and of course, for me, the most interesting is the third movement, Justice Cannot Sleep, where he, for example, he says, "What a stupendous, what an incomprehensible machine is man. who can endure toil, famine, stripes, imprisonment, and death itself in vindication of his own liberty, and the next moment inflict on his fellow men a bondage fraught with misery. And in this movement, it's when he goes on to talk about everything from which slaves he needs to make sure have blankets, to which slaves have run away and gotten shot by a bounty hunter, to how it's an abomination, and there's a superior place in heaven for those who hasten to abolish slavery. And then in the next breath, you know, he tells how many slaves he has. So for me as a Virginian growing up in the South, going to Monticello and was probably the first time I ever learned about slavery, because we started going when I was 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, the whole issue of race relationships has been extremely, you know, visible in my career. I've tried to use music over and over again as a way to bring about reconciliation and understanding and healing, and I, you know, I've been doing that for years. And as I was working on this music, I realized just how deeply my ties and roots go into my Virginia history and how it has influenced the way I do everything I do and why I do what I do, because I could not reconcile as a child, nor can I today, the existence of anything so horrific. And to these historical programs that I love to do, almost all of them in some way tie to race, if they have to do with America. And so just to see that whole kind of coming full circle with the combination of the Abraham Lincoln concerts last year and now this Jefferson one, all tying back to my roots as a Southern girl and the things that I learned and the things that became a part of my sense of justice from childhood on. It's really significant and eye-opening, I think, for me at least.
Music director Karen Lynn Deal of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra regarding Judith Chaitin's new work, Jefferson in His Own Words, which will have its world premiere this weekend, Friday and Saturday, in Bloomington and Springfield, in that order. And coming up shortly, a conversation with the composer herself here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program is made possible with support from the Danville Symphony Orchestra. Jeremy Swirling and Margaret Jones perform the classics this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Danville High School Auditorium. More information is available from the Symphony Office at 443-5300. The other work on the program is the Second Symphony of Johannes Brahms, and I will try to put up the rest of the interview that I had with Karen Deal just a couple of days ago, in which she talked about her personal associations with Brahms. But here is the third movement of the Second Symphony of Brahms. This is a performance by the Vienna Philharmonic conducted by Leonard Bernstein. That's a portion of the third movement of the Second Symphony of Johannes Brahms on the Illinois Symphony Concerts this weekend. Leonard Bernstein with the Vienna Philharmonic. On this portion of the show, we have the composer featured on the Illinois Symphony Concerts this weekend, Friday and Saturday night. We've heard from Karen Lynn Deal about Judith Chaitin, and now we'll hear from Judith Chaitin about Judith Chaitin and about a little bit more about her work on the program. But I want to ask you first just a little bit about your work in general, if it's even possible to make generalizations, because it seems to be quite wide-ranging. Do you have any sort of focus that draws you to compose?
Well, I would have to say that I am really fascinated and captivated by sound. And that is probably what led me from the acoustic world to the digital world. And I really think of them as being united. And for me, they're all about the amazing magic sonic possibilities that surround us. So whether I'm composing for acoustic instruments, which I still love, or exploring different types of digital media, it's still all about a kind of shaping process of sonic detail.
And give us an idea of what you mean by digital media, some of the options you have.
Well, there are so many, and that's what makes it so fun. I've done a fair amount of electroacoustic music, which means combining acoustic instruments with electronic ones. I've also done some music for digital media on its own. I've done some digital media for dance for a wonderful film project called Rotunda, which I did in collaboration with filmmaker Robert Arnold. I've done installations. I've done film music. So it really runs the gamut. But I still compose quite a bit for traditional instruments, orchestra, chamber music, chorus, etc.
You're in the computer music department or division.
No, actually, I'm in the music department, and one of the special things about the music department at the University of Virginia is that, again, we do not make this kind of divide. So I did found the Virginia Center for Computer Music in the late 80s, but all of our students do a combination of work with acoustic instruments and digital media so that they really understand both worlds.
Okay, great. Thanks for the clarification. When you're writing for the digital media, do you have natural sounds in mind when you're when it's just digital, or are you using trying to just make your own sounds?
Okay, I think that's a very, very good, very interesting question. When I work with digital media, I'm only interested in creating music that can't be created in another way. In other words, I'm not interested in trying to imitate the sound of real-world instruments. I might be interested, for instance, in a recent piece, Spring Tides, for amplified flute, clarinet, violin, cello, piano, and interactive electronics. The sound of the instruments is changed as they are playing, and it kind of augments the universe of sounds that they can make and what the melodic and harmonic and other sonic shapes can be. So I love acoustic instruments. I in no way want to displace them or think they're displaceable. But I think that the digital medium enables us to use sounds that otherwise we would not have access to or could not transform in those ways. So let me just give you a quick example. I was commissioned to do a piece called Singing the Blue Ridge for a project called Preserving the Rural Soundscape, and I scored it for mezzo, baritone, orchestra, and electronics made from wild animal calls. And it was really fantastic to be able to put together the sounds of the orchestra and the singers and animals indigenous to this area, ranging from beavers and otters to wolves and all kinds of different birds, for instance.
So in that case, natural sounds were involved in the electronics, but you couldn't actually have brought in these animals to perform.
And another quick example is Penelope's Song, which is scored for amplified solo instruments such as viola. There are several versions of it. And electronic sounds that I recorded and then processed of a local weaver working on wooden looms. So again, that's taking sounds that exist out there in the world, but that normally would not be able to be drawn into the world of a musical composition.
Yeah, it would be quite prohibitive to bring a loom in and have somebody work at it, on it in the
exactly.
concert hall.
Exactly, on top of which then you wouldn't have the option of the fantastic transformations that you can use to shape the sound so that sometimes the source of the sound is clear and sometimes it's transformed to the point where it would be impossible to recognize it, and I may make a beautiful long tone out of a sound that originally started off as a short sound on a wooden loom.
You sent me a short sample from which we will in turn play a sample called Cherry Blossom in a Wrapped Thing after Hokusai. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Be happy to explain that a little bit. This piece was inspired by a print by the wonderful Japanese printmaker known as Hokusai, and the print is of a cherry blossom and a translucent wrapping of of something whose makeup one really can't decipher, and to me the print suggested the ephemeralness of life. And the piece was commissioned by F. Gerard Arante for his new CD that's just come out on Au Courant Records on a disc called Delicate Balance. And I thought that there was a beautiful match there between the inspiration of this print and the sort of ephemeral nature of the cherry blossom and the idea of delicate balance. And so in this piece, I think what one can hear is that there is a sense of this very transparent kind of electronics, and many of the gestures of the clarinet feel like what the action would be, the gesture of the idea of a cherry blossom drifting in the wind.
So we'll hear just a portion of it, primarily because it's rather soft and probably a little difficult to convey on radio. So I'll turn the sound up as best I can and give people at least a sound of an idea of the sound
okay.
of these combinations here:
okay.
amplified clarinet and electronics. Music by Judith Shayton, who's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. That was a portion of a work by Judith Shayton called Cherry Blossom and a Wrapped Thing after Hokusai, the name of the printmaker from Japan, for amplified clarinet and electronics. We heard a portion of it just to give you an idea of some of what she's been describing in her work with digital media and often combining acoustic instruments. And she's talking with us right now in advance of the world premiere of her new piece called Jefferson in His Own Words for narrator and orchestra. Is going to be premiered by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday and Saturday nights in Bloomington and Springfield, respectively. And before we get to talk about that piece specifically, I do want to lead into a really strikingly different piece, which you also sent me a sample of. This is for a cappella chorus, Adonai Roi. You refer to in notes on your website that your Jewish heritage often, or at least sometimes, does influence some of the music you write, and this is obviously pretty clearly done.
Yes, in this case, I chose to set Psalm 23 in the original Hebrew, and this is in a recording by Judith Klurman on New World Records with her New York concert singers, and I was very interested in trying to find a way to use the original Hebrew, and it's a very harmonious kind of music. When I'm setting text, whether it be narrated as in the case of the Jefferson piece or sung, I'm always interested in trying to find a way to amplify and where possible, embody something of the meaning of the text, and that was what I was trying for in this piece.
Did you have any sort of traditional chant in mind when you wrote this piece?
No, I really did not try. I mean, there certainly are ways of intoning the original. I did not try to imitate that.
Okay, music by Judith Shaton, Adonai Roi for a cappella chorus, again here on Live and Local. And that was a short work by Judith Shaton, Adonai Roi. I just sort of want to give you a sample of some of her work sounds like before we talk about a work for which we can't give you a sample because it hasn't been performed yet until this weekend. And that is her work regarding Thomas Jefferson with the Illinois Symphony this weekend. I like the recording you sent me of and also the title of this work, Piping the Earth for Orchestra. What does that title refer to?
That's a good question. Piping the Earth actually comes from an ancient Chinese text called the Chuanzi, and it refers to the way in which sound moving through different places creates the way in which wind moving through different places creates such different sounds, but it's always wind. And that seemed very musically suggestive to me. What's amusing is that I composed this piece after going through the earthquake in California, in the San Francisco area, in 1989, and some people who've listened to this piece tell me that they can hear the rumblings of the earth in it and the tempestuousness of the earth. It starts very, very quietly with just some mere rustlings, but pretty soon the wind kicks up and one can certainly hear it whipping around in parts of this piece.
Any particular comment on instruments that are used for certain effects?
Well, this piece, it is scored for full orchestra. The opening has just rustlings where the string players, for instance, are fingering the strings but are not actually using their bows. So it's very quiet and just sounds like a kind of rustle. And then there are places where some of the wind instruments, such as the flute, are using harmonic sounds, and there's a very kind of silvery quality to that. And then in other places, you really hear sort of cascades of sound through the entire orchestra.
We'll try to play a longer segment of this one because it really does take a while to develop even a sense of the music.
Mm-hmm.
It's Piping the Earth. In fact, I'll start a little bit into it because it is so quiet at the beginning and we'll
sure,
sort of ease in. And the music, again, is by Judith Shaton. This is the Moravian Philharmonic, is that right?
Correct. Conducted by Joel Subin.
Great. Thanks. Here on Live and Local. An excerpt from a work called Piping the Earth by Judith Shaton, performed here by the Moravian Philharmonic, conducted by Joel Subin. And, you know, when you began to talk to me about that, you said it came from a Chinese source, and one of the pieces we played earlier was from a Japanese source of sorts, and then a Hebrew source. I mean, where do you find some of the sources for for these compositions? Because it seems to me you've got to be pretty eclectic in your interests to even have discovered some of these things.
Well, I am, and I guess I sometimes think of myself as having a kind of sonic antennae that just stay on all the time. So in this film piece that I recently did in collaboration with Robert Arnold, it is a film based on over 300,000 images we collected from a fixed point of Jefferson's rotunda and lawn, and I made the music from recordings I did over the course of a year of sounds around the rotunda and in it, and unscripted interviews. And one of the things that I found most delightful was that when I teach in an old Cabell Hall on the lawn, sometimes I'm bothered by the sound of lawnmowers. In the case of this piece, when I was outside making recordings, I listened to them and started hearing their harmonics and thought, these are actually really wonderful, and I got to transform them into something very positive that I used in the composition.
And which composition is that?
That is called Rotunda, and that is a film collaboration with Robert Arnold. And so I think it's really just a kind of attitude that I have unconsciously cultivated, that when I'm either just on a daily basis, I think I have a certain sensitivity to my surroundings, what I'm reading, what I'm experiencing. I did another piece called Time to Burn for oboe and two percussion that was just inspired by some of the unhappy political situations going on around us. So I think as an artist, I feel open to the world around me and take my inspiration from many different sources.
Which brings us to the inspiration for the work that's having its world premiere this weekend, Jefferson in His Own Words, for narrator and orchestra. Illinois Symphony is giving those premieres Friday and Saturday, Friday in Bloomington and Saturday in Springfield. What was the impetus for this?
Well, it was somewhat complicated. I had been approached by the Charlottesville and University Symphony about doing a piece that had a Jefferson relationship, and then Karen Deal and I had been discussing the possibility of doing a piece that would honor Mr. Gerald Morgan, a longtime friend of the symphony and a wonderful friend of mine as well, who is himself a direct Jefferson descendant. And so we started by putting those two together and realizing that creating a piece around Jefferson would be a wonderful way to honor Mr. Morgan. And, of course, Jefferson is the founder of the University of Virginia. This is actually, and in a way surprisingly to me, the third piece that I have done with a theme that refers to Jefferson.
And the words come from, in this case?
The words are all taken from Jefferson letters and from his farm books. And he was an extraordinarily prolific writer. And so this was quite an interesting challenge. And I had the good fortune to have as a collaborator on the text the noted American poet Barbara Goldberg. And we both did extensive reading. And I had wanted to find a way to look at a number of facets of Jefferson's personality and not just focus on the admittedly amazing political writings, but also to get at some of the more personal aspects of his personality and some of the things he struggled with, such as the issue of slavery.
And how did you in what way did those words transform themselves into sound? The transformations you've described so far have at least come in part from visual and other sound sources.
Well, I've also been very inspired by literature, and I've done quite a bit of setting of texts ranging from Russian poems of Anna Akhmatova to a big chunk of the Declaration of Independence in a piece called We Hold These Truths for chorus, brass, quintet, and timpani that was commissioned by the University of Virginia for Jefferson's 250th birthday. So in this case, there are four movements, each of which focuses on a different aspect of Jefferson. And in each of them, the color and character of the music was matched to the meaning and quality of the words. And I also, in several movements, refer at least briefly to music that he loved. So, for instance, the second movement begins with a short quote from Corelli's La Folia, which is a piece that he was known to like. And in the last movement, I have a short quote from a Scottish air that was one of his favorites.
And Karen is beginning the program with Corelli Concerto Grosso.
She is, and nice that is a wonderful coincidence. She did not know that I was using Corelli, and when I was working on this, I didn't know she had programmed Corelli.
Sometimes these things come together serendipitously, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, it has been a pleasure to talk with you, and I hope that audiences will be sufficiently intrigued to find out how someone who can write the variety of music we've just shown can write something which I'm willing to bet sounds very little like anything we've heard so far.
This is undoubtedly the case, and one of the things that excites me in setting texts is to find ways that are really specific to those words so that it's not just generic Shaitan music, but it's really tailored to the meaning of the words at hand. And let me close by saying I'm very excited that Bill Curtis is the narrator for this. I think that that's really an inspired choice.
Bill Curtis will narrate Judith Shaitan's Jefferson in his own words with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois, Springfield. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our show is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. 10,000 Villages' 18th annual showcase of heirloom quality oriental rugs will be held March 10th through the 13th at their store. There will be an informational seminar about oriental rugs on Thursday, March 11th. That's tonight at 7 o'clock. And I'll have a forecast for you in just a few minutes and a look at our calendar. In billing today's program, I said we'd be having a conversation regarding the Ballet Folklorico de Mexico, which is at the Sangamon Auditorium tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in Springfield. And we were not able to connect with the director of the ballet in Mexico, unfortunately, which we tried this morning. So I did think I would play at least an idea of some of the music that is going to be played and danced and otherwise turned into a visual spectacle. They sent me these clips. This is exactly the sort of thing you might hear, an example of the sort of thing you might hear if you go to that on Friday night.
El día 23 de junio hablo con los más presentes. Fue tomada Zacatecas por las tropas insurgentes. Al llegar Francisco Villa, sus medidas fue tomando, y a cada uno en sus puestos y en los cuerpos.